Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Declarations of War podcast, episode 66, featuring the results of the first annual Black Mark Awards. Your host for this evening, Alexei Card, CSM representative Ali Aras.
Hello.
Ninja Turtle.
Hello.
And the sensational Sensational.
Hey, guys.
First off, I want to give a shout out to Fly Reckless, who will soon be celebrating their 100th episode. That's a huge milestone. And also want to give big ups to the cast, crew, and fan base of Welcome to Night Vale. Not an EVE-related podcast, but definitely the best thing I've found on the internet in the past 2 weeks. So, much love. Please keep doing that show.
That show is fantastic. I want to give my shout-out to everyone who kicked in some cash to help me replace the jump freighter. Between that and my rainy day stash of moon goo that I found under the couch on one of my alts, I have a shiny new jump freighter, which is remarkably similar to the last one, except it hasn't been blown up. So I can once again hop through space, space trucking.
I got to watch that live. It was pretty unreal. It happened so quick. You didn't really know. It was just one moment. It was like, oh shit. We were all like, what? I just lost my jump freighter. It happened under space hangout.
Yeah, and then that was like my focus for the rest of the evening was just shot, and I feel a little bad about that. Anyways.
Sorry. I have two quick PSAs. Big shout out to RVB Bespro and CSM rep Mangala Solaris for RVB Ganked 100. It's coming up in a couple of days on the 18th. It's going to be a bloodbath, so check that out. Also, Bronya Boga from Down the Pipe podcast hinted that he'd be hosting another Milwaukee meetup soon-ish. So if you're in that area, keep an eye on the forums. I'll let you know if I hear anything. Sensational. You got a shout-out?
Sounds good, Turtle. Yeah, absolutely. I think CCP, they get a little bit too much of the hate. And I have to say, ever since the Rubicon expansion, they've done a really good job. The servers seem to be much more available than usual. So great job. Shout-out to CCP for minimizing that downtime.
All right. I want to give a thank you to our sponsor, EVE Timecode. Buy 14 EVE Timecodes, get one free. EVETimecode.com, where your business counts. Now, longtime listeners of the podcast will know Sensational because we used to talk about him a lot. He is the lead FC for the Condemned and Convicted, which is one of NAR's member corps. They were like pretty much our partner corp for a good, 6 months? Something like that?
Mm-hmm.
And Sin was an absolutely dynamic FC during that time, and we never actually got him on the show, so it's good to have him here now. And the reason we bring him on is because the Black Mark Awards. We talked about the nominations in the last show. We've got the results in, and Sin cleaned up. He was nominated in like 3 different categories, and he won every single one of them. So it's really nice to have him on here, and now you will be eligible for next year's Best Declarations of War guest. So there you go.
Great. Thanks, Al. Great to be here.
All right, so let's get into it. Now, Pilot of the Year. The nominations were Deliter, Enhajgreb, Pepizar, and Zareli Anzo. The first 3 are NAR directors. The last is the CEO of our current partner corp, Yggdrasil Woodchoppers. And the results are a 3-way tie between Deliter, Greb, and Peppy. I cannot explain. And Zareli wasn't too far behind. He was only behind the pack by 2 votes. So props to them. We'll have to have some kind of death race or fight to the death. Something involving death to figure out who is the undisputed Pilot of the Year. More details on that as it develops. For Fail of the Year, far and away, beating out even McBarnacle, undocking in a Megathron, believing it was a shuttle, and going a jump and a half, still thinking it was a shuttle, right up until Red vs. Blue killed him.
In Rubicon, after Rubicon.
Say?
After Rubicon, so he was warping slowly in his shuttle.
Yes, yes. Extremely slowly. His large, gun-wielding shuttle.
Yeah, with large hybrid turrets.
That actually has modules in the lower part of his screen, assuming he kept the UI right. But yeah. Even that got beat out by our web hosting company, StyleX Networks, who you can personally thank on Twitter, at StyleX Networks, for all the downtime on Noir's website, Declarations of War website, and our iTunes feed not updating on time. All thanks to these guys. We've had probably more, not more, but almost as much downtime as uptime with this company. And yeah, they were overwhelmingly awarded Fail of the Year. And have blocked me on Twitter. Because every time there was downtime, I would tweet at them like their page says to do. But I guess they didn't appreciate it after the first 3 or 4 times. Fuck you, StyleX Networks. Fuck you. This is where Sin comes in. Best FC, beating me out by 2 votes. Sensational. Congratulations.
Hey, thanks. I'm sure the voting was tight, and it's good to know that the ISK that I sent to all those pilots that voted for me definitely found its way into their account, so thanks for all the votes, guys.
Bribery, corruption, scandal. But, yeah, how does it feel to be picked as the best FC for an alliance you're not even in anymore?
Well, I was telling you when you told me I was even nominated back when you opened the voting, I said, you know, hey, it's pretty classy that even though I'm not in the alliance anymore, what a person did during the period of performance that the voting is against are considered. I said that's, you know, pretty class act, and, you know, of course, no longer in the alliance, but still left on good terms. And, you know, while I was there, you know, it was really great that from the day I joined, I was able to, it was trusted to take the fleets out to do whether it was, you know, Black Ops hot drops behind enemy lines, or whether it was a standard roams or anything in between. It was really, really great to see that and go ahead and trust people to do that, and I think we had pretty good results, so feels pretty good. Appreciate it.
Yeah, your fleets were almost always very successful, and I think people liked your style and the fact that you always had great scouting assets and stuff. Personally, I liked it because there was another FC, like, I mean, it became really obvious, like you said, when you came in, you were trusted to do stuff. I mean, from my perspective, it was really obvious after your first couple fleets that you knew what you were doing at an extremely high level. And I felt like 100% fine when I logged in and you were FCing. Like, I knew I didn't have to worry about it. I could just be a grunt or be a scout or, you know, be whatever you needed. And I didn't have to worry about having to take over the fleet if something were to go wrong. Because you just, I don't know if it was whether you actually knew and you were just like being confident or what, but I think everybody was like willing to walk into hell for you in terms of fleets.
Well, I think the fact that we caused more fires than we died in also certainly helps to build confidence over time in any FC.
Certainly. But speaking of the Delve Ops, you won an award for that as well. Best Op. The Delve Black Ops. Now, sort of a cheat because we really wanted it to be just one particular operation or fight. But there were really so many good drops to pick from. I don't really think we could have, even if we wanted to. So,
well, on a deployment that deep and involving the number of pilots that we had, I think, you know, there were probably 20 to 25 pilots that were involved on some of the kill mails plus some alt, so it was a good number of people. You know, the op would not have been a success if it hadn't been for the excellent logistic support from all the people that will probably want their alts to remain nameless, and, you know, certainly their mains within the Noir Alliance, getting towers set up and bringing in the incredible amount of fuel. The campaign itself was, I believe it was right at 100 bill, just a little bit less, if I'm not mistaken, killed. So you kind of think about that and say, well, yeah, there were some marauders in there and some faction battleships and carrier too. But, you know, to put up that kind of ISK from almost exclusively hot drops, you know, you're burning isotopes. So, you know, none of that would have been possible if it hadn't been for the many, many trips of fuel and spare hunter-killer ships and suicide sinos, hero sinos, that we used throughout that contract. So it was really, really good. And, you know, people asked me to this day, said, who was the customer? Of course, you know, we don't talk about that. And some people have said, you know, similar to, there was an article on one of the news sites a few weeks ago about I'm not going to name the alliance, but one of the leaders got on their State of the Alliance and said, you know, hey, we need everyone to respond to these CTAs. And during the CTAs, we're going to send out a squad looking for people that are ratting instead of responding to the CTA. And if we catch a rat and we're going to kill, this is okay. Was it when Test was supposed to be on the front lines fighting? Was it someone having us come through the back door to make sure, you know, hey, you know, everyone's out at the CTA doing what they're supposed to do? Or was it somebody else trying to inflict more damage, you know, in the ISK making back line? So I'll never tell, but still fun to talk about. Great op.
Yeah, very epic. Nearly 500 kills. I believe we are not wrong in saying it was entirely hot drops. I don't think we actually got into a fight that entire period. It was just drop after drop after drop after drop after drop. Now, some of the drops we killed, like, multiple ships in the same go, but I wouldn't really describe them as fleet fights.
Yeah, we had a few prototypical builds for our hunter killers unveiled during that contract as well, including one that was able to tank those four spider tanked and sentry dummies that were sitting on the undock waiting for us to drop them. He knew it was coming. He wanted to fight it, figured he could kill the Sino ship. And we got that. There was at least one carrier that we killed. I think somebody had promised the guys that we would get at least one carrier kill on the contract, and sure enough, we delivered on that. And I think if you were to make a punch list of every single shiny ship there is in game, I think we killed one of each on that contract. It was really, really good. A lot of variety.
Oh, yeah. And then there were some surprises as well, like the Loki that had high-grade snakes in its cargo hold.
That was...
not interdiction nullified, not cloaky Loki.
Wow.
Oops.
Yep.
That was nominated for Fail of the Year, and probably would have won if not for the shuttle and the poor web hosting. The shuttle front. And the final category, which you won, and I don't know how much you want to talk about it. We did mention it on the podcast quite a bit, giving you some shout-outs and support at the time. But maybe if you want to go into it a little bit from your perspective. Most shocking moment.
Yeah, so the most shocking moment for everyone, including myself, was I suddenly disappeared from game because I became ill all of a sudden. And fast forward to the end, root cause was actually mercury poisoning, which, you know, unless you're into eating thermometers, you're probably have nothing to worry about. But it also means that there's not a whole lot of reference material available in the medical community for what to do if you have this and this is how you got it and so forth. And turns out one of the things that is that not always but can be severely damaged as a result of mercury poisoning is your eyesight. And I'll fast forward again several surgeries, and now here I am. I have permanent damage to my peripheral vision, but my straight ahead vision is fine. And it's, you know, same as it was beforehand. I just have a little bit narrower vision. So now I have an excuse when people say, you know, hey, you didn't see the Irazu on scan? No, I didn't. I did not see that. So I'm good to go, and it's good to be back, and appreciate all the support that came in that I saw once I was able to actually see the computer screen again. So much appreciated.
You can't make a star. Doesn't even look like one. It's because I'm blind, you jackass.
Yeah, I've definitely got the title from my corp right now. It says, who made that man a gunner? It's, you know, interesting reference there. So, yeah, the jokes will never get old, I'm sure, but good as new.
Did they ever find out, like, what the root cause was, how you got that much mercury in your system?
Mm-hmm. I was doing some renovation in a basement of a house we have, and had the old-style twist thermostats, and part of the reno was to demolish the walls, and I didn't really see any cautionary labels like, do not bust this open because it has this in it and it will cause these problems. So I was just, you know, going to work with a, you know, hammer, a sledge, and a pry bar, taking the walls apart. And anyway, you can guess the rest.
Yeah, there's those old style thermostats have a little tube of mercury in the back that makes the electrical contact. So don't want to hit those with a hammer.
Yeah, especially if it, once you've hit it, you somehow ingest it. You know, getting into the air is one thing, but if you actually ingest it, it's really bad.
Well, that could have been, like, maybe it could have gotten on your hands and then when you're eating or something like that. Or who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Alrighty. Well, it's very nice that you got through all the various medical procedures and recovery time and all that stuff, and now you are not only back nearly as good as new, but you're playing Eve again with multiple accounts as it should be.
I still miss the barbecue, though.
Yeah, we missed you too, man. It was fun. But, it was weird, because that was, like, right at the beginning when we didn't even know what happened to you. Nobody knew. We only had to get... Or we were only able to get, like, third-hand information from Black Camper, your CEO. And he didn't even know at that time. Like, just all of a sudden, no one was able to contact you. And we're like, oh, that's weird. He's on all the time. All right, we'll have to catch you next year, maybe.
Most definitely.
Now, Recruit of the Year. This was another hotly contested category. Not quite as much as Pilot of the Year, but this is a category open to people that joined our mercenary group in the past year. They had to have been recruited that year in order to qualify, and there were three people nominated: Crazier, Leoso, and Horuk. And the winner by four votes, Horuk. And we were lucky enough to have him be able to join us today. So, let me add you, give you some talk power here. I think you have it already.
Oh, okay. Hello, everybody. Thank you for having me.
All right, man. So, tell everybody a little bit about when you joined, why you joined, and what your experience has been in our mercenary group.
Well, I think I joined about 7 months ago, is that right, in June? And back then I was coming out of a very small corporation. Had a couple of nice guys in it, but there wasn't much happening at that time, and it was a bit chaotic. So I was looking for something more organized, something that would provide me with a better environment of having some nice PvP. And a friend of mine showed me your website, the Noir website, and I read through it, and I liked the professionalism about it, and that's why I applied. And luckily, I got accepted. And my first couple of days in Noir were a blast right away, because as soon as I joined, we went off in the Delph contract. We've talked about that.
that was your first go.
Exactly. I was just a couple of days in the academy when we went to Delph. So that has set a high standard for me. And ever since, I had a blast, really. Doesn't get boring, you know. Some different plays every couple of weeks, other people to fight, other tactics, different ships, great guys to fly with. It's a good place.
And it's awesome to have you here, and much props to Leoso as well, who came in second with a pretty narrow margin. He's been fantastic for us. Both of you have done a lot of work giving back to Noir Academy after you graduated, so yeah. Just keep doing what you're doing, man. Both of you are doing a great job.
Thanks, I'll try.
Best Declarations of War Guest, another hotly contested category. This one, I mean, the winner was clear, but at the same time, all the entrants had a pretty strong showing. The nominations were Matthias Otero, Freeze, Puppy UK, Seismic Stan, and Victoria Stone. And the winner, Freeze, the CEO of Insidious Empire.
Super mad about bombs.
He's so mad about bombs. His rage-filled rant, I guess, propelled him over Seismic Stan by three votes.
Super easy to troll about it and get worked up about it.
The both episodes not to be missed, in my opinion. But yeah, Freeze got a little carried away, I think. But people loved it, so we weren't able to get him on for this show, but we'll try to get him back sometime soon. Have a repeat performance, get him up for the category next year. Best creation, in by far the biggest blowout of any poll, with winning by 24 votes. Best creation, FleetUp.com, created by Wacktopia. Now, FleetUp.com has completely revolutionized how Noir has organized our doctrines and posted ops and all that stuff. And apparently we're not alone. A lot of people have been getting FleetUp accounts for their corps and alliances, and he's had to expand his servers, and he's still doing patchwork to try to bring in more features and better performance.
Yeah, there's a lot of alliances that use FleetUp. We use FleetUp, or we have it anyways, we don't really use it.
Yeah, it's incredible. If you don't have it, and you're a director, CEO, or FC, I would definitely look into it and see if it's going to fit for your corporate alliance, because it really does. I mean, for me, it changed the game. Like, you can store all your fits in there. You can move them in and out of doctrines as you need. And then when you post ops, you can have them automatically sync to your pilot's Google calendars, which I found incredibly helpful for me personally. And this allowed me to vastly increase my attendance in scheduled ops, which is cool, because it's my own alliance, and I should probably be there when we're doing ops. In the coming year, it's going to get more social as well. You're going to be able to share ops and fits between your blues, which will be fun. I know that was something we talked about a lot between Noir and Soundmind when we were doing the Providence contract. Now, Community MVP. This is an exclusive category for people not in our alliance. And there were, you know, pretty solid nominations. Kill 2, Tyne, who ran Nightmare Knight New Eden, and Xanderfina of Crossing Zebras. And I thought Xander would take it, and it was in fact close, but your winner, Kill 2, aka CCP Rise. Now, to be clear, the nomination came in before he was picked up for the CCP's balance team, so this is pretty much just for his work promoting solo PvP and promoting EVE streaming. So, much congrats to him. We weren't able to get him on the show either, but maybe we will, Ali Ross willing, get him as a guest at some point in the future. Because we've had CCP Fozzy, but I don't think we've had a CCP Rise for an appreciable length of time.
We could get Fozzy and Rise and just have them argue back and forth, sit back, we don't even have to worry about or writing a podcast.
Hashtag content. Actually, that would probably be a lot of fun, actually. We'll have to wait for them to do something extremely controversial.
Right, so. Just be horribly wrong about rebalancing again and get Fozzy mad at us.
Right. We could just wait for him to, like, spring onto the show after I make a comment about something and he can explain how we're wrong. That was really funny. I'm talking, of course, about the episode Suddenly Fozzy. You can go back into the archive and check it out, where, I'm not even kidding, we didn't even schedule Fozzy as a guest. He just showed up. Literally at the last minute, and was like, hey, so you're wrong about this. Can I come on and talk about it? And it's like, alright, let's do it.
That was the same one as we had Freeze on for. That was a good episode.
It was the link changes, and you and me, Alex, were bitching about the link changes on that ep, and then he heard it, and then came the next time for our opinions and our souls.
I think Rise is a bit more mild-mannered, maybe. I don't know. We'll find out. It'll be like Batman versus Superman on the podcast. Alright, and that is it, guys. Your Black Mark Awards for 2013. Response for this has been actually pretty damn good, so I think I can speak confidently that we're definitely going to do it again next year, and depending on how much time / effort we have to spare, we may open up quite a few of the categories to public vote. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, all the winners have been contacted. They win the acknowledgement of having won, and they get a share in Nora's trading and manufacturing IPO. The gift that keeps on giving. So congratulations to all our winners, and thank you, Horak and Sin, for joining us. Sin will be staying on with us as a guest host, and we're going to move into our next segment. Okay, getting into it, our usual content. Poll results. We threw out a poll because we were talking a lot about the Rail Proteus on the last show, which is an armor-tanked, AHAC-style Proteus fit with railguns. I'm not a fan, to be to be understated about it, but it's been quite popular in the Southern War, so we threw it out there to the viewers. The question is, Rail Proteus, yes or no? 60% of our audience say yes, Rail Proteuses. I am confused. Can anyone on the cast explain why these Rail Proteuses are good?
Numbers.
I don't think so.
I can. Numbers and drone assist.
But they're not using drones, though. Are you saying they're a counter to drones?
Mm-mm. I'm saying they can assist other people's drones, like that big-ass pile of dummies behind them.
Well, yeah, but you don't need a whole fleet for that.
Yeah,
there's one dude, right?
What are we gonna do with all these? What are we gonna do with all these people?
I don't know. Put them in Dominic.
Shove them in the Tech 3, Sam. Way more survivable. Smaller.
I kind of like Ali's idea about doing drone Proteuses, even though they don't do quite as much damage. If you're a big alliance, you know, where you can field lots of people, they're pretty scary in terms of the survivability combined with the damage projection. I don't know. I like the. I mean, I can see why people are enthusiastic about the idea of the Rail Proteus fleet. I just don't see it winning in the current meta. I mean, no one has some. People voted yes in the poll, but no one put a comment of like, well, here's this fleet where Rail Proteus is completely crushed, like Dominix's or Ishtar's or Slowcat fleet or Megathron's or any of the other, like a Maelstrom fleet. No one's highlighted that. I haven't, not that I have like scoured the internet to look for this, but I haven't noticed any occasions where they've won a major engagement. But I don't know. Maybe I'll have to give it a try someday. Just take a Rail Proteus fleet out and just see what's good. Have you ever used one of these, Sin?
Have not.
Any interest?
I mean, it depends. Compared to what? What do I have to choose from?
If the pilot can fly a Rail Proteus, anything else that a Rail Proteus spec pilot could probably fly. So, like, Galenti Tech 2 Cruisers, for sure.
Yeah, I mean...
Or a Blaster Proteus, even.
I mean, aside from the fact that you put out sentries and you're in a rolling fight, and you don't always have the chance to go back and pick them up, so over time you run out of drones, the damage projection at long and mid-range is going to be better on an Ishtar than... Rail Proteus, at least it should. So it depends on what you're trying to do. You know, if you need a tankier force because it's, you know, alpha, well, maybe the Rail Proteuses are a little tougher. But if you're looking for just, you know, mid and long range damage, a less expensive option for the same amount or greater DPS is going to be the Ishtar, I would think, and less skill intensive.
All right. Moving on. We wanted to talk about this in the last podcast, but we also had a lot of stuff to catch up on over the holidays, so it sort of got left out. But there was a truly epic fight in Wormhole Space that Noir was actually supposed to be at, but we really got screwed out in terms of our last wormhole contract and our various exit holes. We just could not make it in time. But it was a massive fight between, like, pretty much a who's who of Wormhole Space. You had, like, Blood Union in there. You had, I think the only people that didn't show up was, like, No Holes Barred. And they may have even been there. But you had Sleeper Social Club, Kill It With Fire, Disavowed, Nameless, and the Butcher's Bill. In a less than 30-minute fight, 120 billion ISK. That's like, and that's wormholes, so no super capitals involved at all. This is all caps and tech threes.
But it's also wormholes, so all of their tech threes are blinged all to hell. Like, you're looking at 1 billion tech threes, not sort of a cheaper 400, 500 million stuff that an Ulsec Alliance is going to fly.
Yeah, but still, dead is dead. That's a lot of this down the drain. I believe it involved a little over 400 pilots, I want to say. And there's a video of it up on YouTube. That's sort of hard to tell because it's a bit zoomed out, but you can get a good idea of what was going on. Basically, it was a clash outside of a POS, I think, and it was just huge. Bubbles everywhere, dead caps, Tech 3 fleets of various sizes slamming into one another. And, yeah, it was epic. I'm really sort of pissed that we didn't get there, because it would have been nice.
Yeah, that fight was interesting. You know, there when you have, you know, fights in W space where it's big numbers on big numbers, or even a high number of attackers against the defenders, you know, usually it involves one of two things, right? You have to either ninja pilots and material in over the course of time because of the obvious, you know, mass limitations of the entrance hole or holes, or you, like these guys did, you take control of the static and you continually roll it until you get to the system where you need it, and do the chain collapsing method. And I found it pretty refreshing to have a look at a battle report where people were actually able to achieve that and get a, you know, what you might consider something larger than small gang in a wormhole. It's been a while since we've seen something like that, so it's pretty good.
Yeah, NAR is supporting the Sleeper Social Club side of things, which won nicely, but won without us. We didn't get in on a single male. I mean, from the way the fight was unfolding, with like the sheer number of pilots involved, frankly, the way it was laid out to everyone in the leadership channel was like, this is the kind of engagement which might go for hours and might in fact spread over a couple days. And, you know, we were still harrying, don't get me wrong, but we finally got the fleet together, and we were maybe 10 jumps away from the entrance hole to this fight. And, yeah, we got the call, like, no, it's over. Like, oh, what? But, like, it just started 20 minutes ago. Like, yeah, but it's done. They're done. Like, oh. Okay. Damn. Anyway, go check out that video, and major props to everybody involved. Hopefully we'll catch in on the next one. Carly, want to talk about our next story?
Yeah, sure. I don't know. It's really not really a story, I guess. Just kind of a general trend in the last couple of weeks. A lot of supers have been dying, which is cool. Not really seeing a lot of major shifts in the war front, but to know that that amount of ISK is still getting poured down the drain is kind of a good feeling, I think, you know. That helps ease the standstill a little bit, or the feeling of standstill. There was one case of Guy in Volta was a corp in Verge for a long time with just like 93 carrier kills or something with his Nyx before it ended up getting taken down. But solo, an effective solo capital pilot. That's pretty badass.
It's weird really that, like, a single super death isn't really news anymore.
Yeah, that's been the trend of it. Like, there was a while for a few months where it was like, oh shit, every time a super died, it was like, oh snap. Let's post an article about it. And now it's just kind of like, alright, well, we've become so desensitized to the use of super capitals that it's just like, alright, whatever. It takes a group of them dying now to be news, which maybe is a good indication of where we are and being comfortable with death to all supers.
I still support death to all supers.
I mean, it's the same kind of thing that happened with caps. There was at one point a time when, you know, using a cap ship would be a big investment, and right now a lot of places can just kind of throw them around. I mean, sure, they're not cheap, but they're a lot cheaper than they used to be relative to the kinds of incomes and assets that people have.
I think one of the other things about this story that's, you know, kind of a, well, maybe a minor news point, and I know you guys have talked about this on, you know, previous episodes, was there was a handful of supers that got caught by Black Legion and Solar about a week ago. And I think what was newsworthy about that was that that was the, at least to my recollection, that was the first time that Black Legion had used their own supers since they had lost a good percentage of that super fleet about 3 months ago.
Yeah, now that op was epic.
Yeah, it was the Kadeshi who lost the his four supers to Black Legion and Solar just last week.
All right. So a little bit of an update on the Southern War, speaking of, you know, Black Legion, Kadeshi, and all Solar, all those guys. The Russians have held strong in F4R. On the last show, we were talking about how NCDOT was poised to sort of headshot them by taking out their staging system. That has not happened. F4R is still under AAA control. But what has happened is instead AAA's jump bridge network got disrupted. Several key jump bridges, including SV5, which is sort of like the jump bridge that they use right from Empire to get stuff a little bit deeper into 00, got taken. Now, most of it's been retaken, but it's still going to be a bit before they get their jump bridge network capabilities back up to, you know, what would be considered normal use. They're going to have to use backup systems in the meantime, and then once they actually do get the jump bridge network set up back to how they liked it before, they're going to have to sort of rearrange things. And even if you're not using that backup system anymore, you still have to pay for the jump bridge upgrade, because you can't, unless you just want to destroy it completely, I guess, but there's no, like, turning it off in the SOB system. Once you upgrade something for a jump bridge, that's it. Just like you do for a Sinojammer.
For a Sinojammer, you can have multiple iHubs. You offline one, online the one, online the other one.
Can you really?
Yeah, that's what we did in 4B and QN.
Wow, that's cool.
Because we did not want to pay for that Sinojammer all the time. So it, I don't know if the same thing is possible for a jump bridge mod, but dual hub systems are quite common.
You know what? It probably is the same, but I've actually never heard of an alliance doing that before, although if it mechanically works, I guess that's perfect sense. But isn't there some kind of issue with the other modules in the iHub when you offline in it like that?
Well, sure.
Your indexes or whatever?
Well, sure. I mean, if you have upgrades on your iHub, you would have to duplicate them on the second iHub if you wanted to keep them, right? Because it'll offline your pirate detection array the same as it'll offline your jump bridge module. So that, you know, that's something that you'll have to keep in mind if you actually try and do this. And that does cost a little bit more money and a little bit more time, because you have to get the upgrades out and get them installed, but it's still a way to avoid the SOB bills.
Yeah, and I guess if you have the large organizational capacity of a AAA, probably getting that stuff moved in is not a huge deal.
SV5 also isn't that far from Empire. It's not particularly hard to do. Or LoSec.
Well, you need an actual freighter as opposed to a jump freighter to do it. So it's tricky-ish.
Like you can Titan Bridge a freighter.
Excuse me?
You can Titan Bridge a freighter.
Right, which is what I was going to say. They have enough Titans that it's not a huge deal to assign one to do that. Any of these 00 alliances are drowning in Titans.
Pretty much.
If it was someone like Sam, though, you guys didn't have a Titan back then, so. Depends on what scale. Well, what scale your alliance is. It's the whether getting it in and doing the offline-online trick or just paying the bill would be easier for you. But I imagine in some situations it simply wouldn't be possible. Like smaller alliances that are living one or two regions deep.
For the next thing, not really in-game news, but the Mitanni had a Wall Street Journal article written about him and the Mitanni.com website. Xander was one of the other people the journalist ended up interviewing or asking questions about and is sad that he was not mentioned. But it's a short article. You can find it by searching for it, or it's been posted on, you know, it's been posted on r/eve, and of course the Mitanni.com, but the article was a little bit about the Mitanni himself, and also about the website that he has built.
It was really,
okay.
It was really, like, just 10-15 minutes of this reporter filleting Mitanni, with just some, like, kind of fluffy Eve pieces hanging around it.
Well, he is now the Wall Street Journal certified number one player in the game.
Yeah, go click that link through the Mitanni.com, because I guarantee you there's some sort of referral service making him money for it.
So, although yeah, I don't think that accolade is necessarily undeserved. There are a lot of ways to measure power in Eve, but I think for most of them, Mitanni fits the bill. He controls the most pilots. Some of the most powerful pilots as well. He's got a website that pretty much controls the narrative of how Eve is discussed, just because it's become so popular and so well done that people use it as the de facto news source for the game. I don't know. I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to make an argument about who would be more powerful than him.
Apparently Xander was, like, a big contributor, if not the biggest contributor to this article, in terms of information about it, and he got pretty much removed from everything in terms of credit. It kind of sucks, so.
Well, that's a pretty dick move. Still, it's nice to get Eve in mainstream press. It's always nice for that.
Sure. Didn't have to explode any spaceships this time.
I hope the author, David Roman, goes back and adds a little nod to Xander Fina, though, for providing him that much information. If he really was a key source for the piece, he should be acknowledged, in my opinion. A brief note, an alliance named Darkspawn, which held the majority of Sov and Wicked Creek, disbanded, possibly with some spy-y involvement. You know, the old, disaffected director defection. So a lot of Sov dropped in Wicked Creek, but nothing really came of it. NCDOT and related allies were pretty swift between them, Nully, and some of the smaller alliances in the area. All the Sov was put back up, and the Russians seem to have not made a play to really take any significant piece of Wicked Creek during the shakeup. So it happened. It could have been cool, but wasn't really cool.
I feel like that's what happens to a lot of sub drops these days. Like, the last big sub drop was the N3 renter thing, wasn't it? And that just all came back very quickly.
I think it's just one of those things where, once again, EVE players are really good at organizing and planning for stuff. And the first one or two times that it happened, it was sort of novel. But after that second time, people realized, oh, this is something that could actually happen fairly regularly, and now they know how to handle it. So when it happens, the Alliance leaderships that are affected by this sort of have things down, like, oh, well, this needs to get done, this needs to get done, this needs to get done, and we have Jabber, and we have all these different ways of communicating now that are much more effective than, say, 2 or 3 years ago.
Right.
And it just sort of gets handled. We have a special guest calling back to our wormhole story.
Yeah, I meant to do this earlier, because we had a few Aquila guys in the fight, and I wasn't there, obviously, but we did have a few guys there, so I kind of wanted to get some inside opinion from none other than one of my bosses. This is Starconquer212. He's a really solid guy. Taskmaster, General Motherbird, and say hello.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Yeah, that was, if you mean the Disavowed fight, that's what I'm going to assume. That was the most recent one. It was interesting. It was not as exciting or as nail-biting as, like, the Blood Union invasion of W Space, however.
But give us some details on the fight, because I see you were in a Proteus, and you survived. You did not die in a fire.
Was it a real Proteus?
Why would you use a real Proteus?
Oh, there's a no. No vote right there.
Makes sense in Sov, I guess, but not in wormholes. Essentially, the story is kind of interesting, I guess, but Killer with Fire and Sleeps with Social Club invaded Disavowed's home wormhole. Because, I don't know, they were looking for a beef. Their invasion actually failed. It was a pretty good fight from what I could tell. And then, so Disavowed rose to the challenge and counter-invaded Lead Farmers Wormhole, which is a corporation in Kill It With Fire. And they quickly brought in a bunch of caps and maintained hull control until Hard Knocks connected at some point in the late evening, and they lost hull control, at which point the side that I was on, which would be Kill It With Fire side, started mass bringing in people.
And you guys used chain collapse for that, right?
Well, yeah, you chain collapse and you scan out the new chain and basically hold control. Whoever holds hold control of the wormhole really dictates the fight and how it's going to go down. It gives you a massive advantage over reinforcements and stopping someone else from bringing in reinforcements.
And how did the fight go? Basically, who warped in on who? What doctrines were squaring off against what? And what was the turning point of the fight?
Well, it wasn't what I would call like an epic like nail biter, because it was the defending side had 3-1 odds in numbers. Those fights are pretty self-explanatory. I give huge props for Disavowed choosing to fight and whatnot with their being 3-1 outnumbered. They brought kind of a sniper dread setup that I think they were going to use to blab a ton of T3s off the field. And Lead Farmers chose a large Pantheon group inside the wormhole as a defense fleet. What ended up happening is Disavowed was going to warp in at range of the friendly fleet, but they fucked up the warp in, and we warped on top of them with a saber, bubbled them, and warped all of the Pantheons and everyone on top of their sniper dreads.
Ouch.
Welp.
Pretty much.
Yeah, that would be if that's all she wrote.
Yeah, I give mad props to Disavowed and people for choosing to fight. Shows a lot of courage in a environment in EVE today where I think killboards have really ruined a lot of things. People are less concerned about a good fight and more about killboard efficiency, when I think it should be the other way around.
I don't always disagree with that. Being a Merc unit, the killboard efficiency is sort of paramount, but it would be freeing in a lot of ways if it didn't exist and it wasn't something we had to worry about.
Yeah, people would be more interested in actually taking risks instead of, you know, just not doing anything. Because really, it's a spaceship game, and you're playing a video game, and you should enjoy yourself and not be so concerned what others think.
Yeah, I do agree. But there's also that that very human desire of wanting to know who won in a struggle. People don't like draws. People don't like disqualifications in fights or anything like that. They want a clear winner and a clear loser. And it's sort of hard to have that without a kill board or some kind of way to track who's blowing what up.
Well,
I mean, you can have the story, you know, who held the field, who achieved their objectives, that kind of thing.
For me, I can recall every really good fight I had by myself without any kill board. I would bet it'd be similar for you as well. What kill boards do, though, is that they allow a third party person to judge the winner and judge how good you are, how bad you are, and more than likely they're going to use the kill board to actually belittle you. And instead of saying, oh, that was a good fight, they're going to say, oh man, you lost that fight, you're an idiot, kind of thing, which I think discourages combat in general.
Well, you just kind of summed it all up there. It's like we do have all have the best fights in our minds, but the way we see them is just the way we see them. It's all anecdotal, I mean, at that point. Like, the kill board involves the third party in that first person story, and it just gives you a way to judge. And I don't like the stigma that's created around kill board, you know, efficiency and ratios and shit like that. But
well, not so much.
There's not a long list of concrete things to look at.
Yeah, exactly. And perhaps not in W space, but certainly in K space, people that are considering engaging, they will use the kill board to as part of their risk assessment, if you will. Say, okay, wow, these guys are really efficient, or look at that, you know, they always escalate the fight, you know, we can't consider engaging that because we don't, you know, have any caps of our own or whatever the case is. So, you know, it's like you said, Star Conqueror, they'll do nothing. They'll sit there. They'll choose not to engage because of what they may have read on a kill board, which in some cases doesn't mean you're a very good pilot, but perhaps you fly with larger numbers and, you know, take fights when it's impossible for you to lose and things like that. So you have a high efficiency.
I always thought kill boards are really, kill mails in general. Like, if you couldn't pull the information from game, but instead if you were in the fight, you could link, like how you link kill mails now to other people, you could link the actual fight in a similar fashion in game, but you couldn't take that information out of game. So anyone that was in the fight could actually link whole battle reports in game to someone in a really cool fashion. But if you weren't in the fight, no one could actually look up those permanent records of you. They would be gone as soon as you logged.
Yeah, I think we all agree that the kill boards, in terms of those of us that, you know, are looking for the good fight, they pretty much work against us for three or four reasons we've discussed. But I think fundamentally, when it comes to any organized competition, whether it's, you know, professional sports or it's some other game, you know, even you know, it's pretty inconceivable to imagine a situation where you would be in a match against an opponent where you could not find any information out about them. That's perfect world, but the whole point of the organized activity, like Alex said, is, you know, there has to be a winner, there has to be a loser.
Oh yeah,
unfortunately, you can choose not to engage.
I just think people, not necessarily, like, go a step further than that. People don't engage just because they aren't sure to win, and they're not so concerned about what the other person is. They're just concerned about looking stupid. You know, I think more people are. It's the same. I think people are more afraid of failure than they are of success.
I think so. That's true, Eve.
It's basically like being a teenager.
Exactly. No, it is. You don't want most guys won't. Your teenager won't ask out the girl that they really have a crush on. They'll just wait around and wait around because they don't. They're more afraid of the loss of, you know, of no than they are than actually of the success of taking a risk.
Yeah, but see, if you could wipe the slate clean and pretend like that never happened when she said no, in same way, if you lost a fight, your ship just magically respawned for you, I think there'd be a lot more people taking fights.
Well, the fights would also be a bit less.
A bit less?
Exactly.
A lot less.
Yeah.
That's the good thing about this game. There is no respawn.
That's probably the only good thing about this game. I mean, we're going to have this discussion a little bit later. And hell, Star Conqueror, you can hang around for it if you want, but there's been some discussion about Eve stagnating, which I guess is sort of a recurring thing, but Ripart Tag put out a pretty massive post about, not massive, but a pretty impactful post about the average user count and the trajectory of it after the past couple expansions, and it really, I think, has blown that discussion a bit wider open than it usually is. So just real quick, a massive fight in K-Space that's worth talking about. Brave Newbies is having a bit of a tussle with some of the groups in Syndicate. Brave had moved nearby Syndicate, and they've been spending their time conquering moons, poking for fights, all that kind of stuff. And they've pretty much started, not a forever war, but a pretty serious conflict between Usurper and Psychotic Tendencies. And, of course, Brave on the other hand. And it really just broke out over the past couple days. There's a massive fight, which also involved Goonswarm, and I whipped my slaves back and forth over a Usurper pass. Over a Usurper attacking a pass. And it was two sort of separate fights. There was a bit of a three-way, and then there was also a follow-up fight where Brave fought Psychotic Tendencies with caps. It was basically battleships and bombers versus Feroxes, which I guess is the Brave weapon of choice in this conflict, which I think is kind of cool. I haven't seen a Ferox fleet doctrine in quite a long time. But unfortunately for them, Feroxes do not do well against Apocalypse Navy issues with Triage Archons, which is the weapon of choice for Psychotic Tendencies. Yeah, they got shredded.
But
Brave did field some caps, but
yeah, I think that's the best part.
Which that, like, Brave is fielding caps now.
Yeah, that it, like the sentence that next engagement saw Brave drop capitals of their own. Like, that is awesome. That's the pinnacle of, like, the player upstart corporation. Like, that dude is. Remember when we talked to him and he was like as green and pie-eyed and dreamy as you could ever imagine. Like, he built something that's just throwing around capitals now. Like, no fucks given. Good for him. Matthias Otero, of course, I'm speaking of.
Yeah. He's gotta be proud of his guys. I'm proud of them, and I'm not even in that alliance.
I'm proud of them. I'm proud of them, too. I've been hearing about some of what they've been doing from my sound friends who have moved down to Syndicate and brought up with them. That's where they're all doing. They got in a lot of large fights there.
Alright. Now, as for what Nora is doing, moving into the contract wrap-up. Actually, we should mention the total butcher's bill of those fights. 75 billion-esque.
Not bad for K-Space.
Not bad at all. Especially not bad for Syndicate, where you usually just see small gang action.
Small cool. gang and Sua.
Yeah.
Small gang before Blob.
As to what Nara's been up to, we are celebrating our 6th anniversary right now, as a matter of fact. And we are attempting to finally fix the fact that we're small and poor all the time. By trying not to be small or poor. We're having a massive recruitment drive, which has brought in quite a few cool new members. Still looking to pull in an entire corp. If anyone out there is listening, your PvP corp is looking for a cool alliance. We are very interested in bringing in another one that's about Noir size, or even maybe a bit larger. Give me a ring. And the other thing that we're doing is heading into LoSec to run incursions, because they pay out way more than the Empire ones, and it's also a good way to generate a little PvP action as well. The basic idea is to make sure that everyone in the corp can field at least the Tech 3, and like maybe have 1 to 2 backup Tech 3s in their hangar. Along with maybe faction battleships for the richer guys. Because we like that fleet. I like that fleet. And I am sad that we cannot field that fleet all the time. So, we are going to be able to field that fleet all the time. And this is how we're going to make it happen. And, yeah. So we're doing that, and we also have scouts out in the nearby areas, seeing what's up, you know. We didn't really catch much in Molden Heath, which is where the last LoSec incursion was, which is usually the hang-around place of Noir and Condemned the Convicted. Condemned was gone, and I think the LoSec incursion scared off quite a few people because there wasn't really much action to be had. I think we killed maybe 10 ships the whole week. There really wasn't much going on. Even our usual opponents, Calamitous Intent and Humblest Crew were gone. So that just it just wasn't much happening. But we have relocated now, and I think the next one is around Iridia. So, change of scenery, change of opponents, and maybe we'll have something to share with you guys next week. Well, next podcast, anyway.
Just one quick thing to add on that. Blood Tear, exciting for those not familiar. It's the two guys that run lots of clients, 50 or more clients they have between the two of them. Saw them in Iridia, in the incursion area, on scan 24 Abaddons. Was just passing through. Interesting to see them doing that.
And there's also a test group that runs. They've got Vindicators and Valgorns and all that good stuff, and they're actually remarkably friendly. We've had the opportunity to kill them over the holiday break, but we talked to them instead, and it turns out they were really nice, so we didn't jump them. And we saw them again in Molten Heath, and we let them go for the same reason. They seem pretty personable. So, shout out to the Test Losec Incursion crew. You guys are alright. I'll kill you some other time.
Hey folks, that's it for part one of our two-part episode 66. Check out part two for a pretty expansive CSM segment and the subsequent discussion from those topics. And thanks for listening.